Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Hey Kids Comics. We are up to issue 62, dead smack in the middle of a story arc, which is always the most dangerous issue of any story arc.
There needs to be a word for, like, you know, pre-penultimate.
Penultimate. We have, okay, that's,
I like
of course.
That. It's a...
That's
it's,
of course
cadmium in flavor.
Oh, it's the cadmium of podcasting. We are joined, of course, by my co-host and life partner, the Jedi Cole Houston, and with us
separately.
With us is friend of the show, consummate artist, brilliant man, master of all things time and space. Unlike Bobby Blake, he totally mountable.
And owns a Manticore.
And owns at least one Manticore.
At least, one that we know of.
Frank, hello, Frank.
Hello.
Frank is just amazing. So we're ecstatic to have him here. Frank, have you ever
Absolutely.
Been on, have you ever been
if
on
you go
the
back
show?
Far enough over at the United States of Geekdom, you'd probably find some appearances, but I don't think this will be your first ever appearance on this show.
Yes, my first appearance on... What's the show called again?
Yowza! The Aristocats, that's what it's called.
The Aristocats.
Hey Kids Comics. Frank was roped into this.
Yeah, I remember now.
Frank was roped into this last minute, so we'll...
Right.
But I wouldn't have it any other way, because Frank, I've been wanting Frank on this show forever. So, thank you. Thank you, Frank. Tonight...
You know, it was to trick him. I told him we were going for cotton candy and
oh, nice.
You mean for not?
Later. We got later. Errands. We got errands to run, Sookie. Errands do not require. Sorry, I just fell into True Blood somehow. We have so far disassembled the hero like so many Legos in the hands of a 9-year-old child that will never be
it
able to
like
put it back together.
It was like reverse Tetris.
It was like reverse Tetris. It was like drunk Jenga. Bobby.
Reverse Tetris is actually easier to play, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
And it's also equally easy to play Equus, which...
You know what? Let's we're only 5 minutes in. Let's save the, let's save the Caligula jokes for about 45, all right?
Okay. Getting started early tonight.
Yeah, you are. Bobby joined us last issue when he drew a tenuous line between hummus and villains. Thank you, Bobby, for that. We learned a lot more about Bobby.
Next week we'll talk about Bob Ganoush and the love interest of heroes.
We learned a lot about Bobby last issue that we never wanted to know.
Yeah, there are things that we apologize. Our audience will never be able to unhear.
Right, or go near Bobby's house in the night again. I smell chickpeas and danger. Tonight.
That was actually Bobby's garage band, Chickpeas and Danger.
It was. It was a short-lived. Though, I will say this for Frank, if you go back far enough on the USG side, 2 years ago at AllCon, Frank joined us for a roundtable USG discussion on was it the apocalypse? I can't remember which one it was.
I think it was the apocalyptic one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the apocalyptic one.
Which was pretty stellar. So you should go back and find that at United States of Geekdom.
Well, we're gonna go ahead and link that in on this one.
.com, which is an early.
I think that was my first and last appearance on USG.
Well, that will change at some point, I'm sure. So, tonight, what we're going to be discussing... Well, first of all, what's the name of the story arc, Cole? Because I'm not going to get it right.
Okay. This story arc is Deconstructing Comics.
Right. And what's the name of this issue?
This particular issue is Stand By Me.
Okay. Where we
because
discuss...
we wanted to go looking for some dead kid along the road.
Right.
No, that's the movie Stand By Me.
I want to enter a pie eating contest with Jerry O'Connell and...
with Bucky Barnes and Jerry O'Connell.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot Bucky Barnes was in that. Oh, my God. So it comes full circle, almost. We are going to be discussing all aspects and the psychology of the stalwart friend of hero tonight. It's and villain. That's important as well.
Oh, absolutely. And every now and again, a villain will sort of open their heart and let someone see the black carnival of death and destruction that is their heart
right.
and soul.
They'll let the love light shine a little bit.
That's right. As E.T. says, I'll be right here. And then he gets shot in the head by the Joker.
That's pretty much, yeah, that's how I remember E.T. ending. And then they had to retcon it out and put in walkie-talkies. Yeah. It sucked.
It was kind of like that Batman the Garden of Eden thing. I just decided last minute it wasn't going to fly.
If we remember the beginning, we discussed the four quadrants of the superhero, which went very well. Cole and I had an argument of sorts. The closest thing to an argument that Cole and I have, which was really
we had a schism.
Right, we had a little bit of a schism today.
That's how you pronounce that word.
Today we bring it back.
All these years, no one's ever said it.
Today we bring it back together as a family, the stalwart friend of comics, heroes and villains. Cole, how do you want to start this thing?
Well, I think we should start with the signature friends.
Right.
Then there are the rather obscure ones you don't hear about as often.
Okay.
There are the sort of just friends type.
The friend zoned.
Yeah, you don't broach that, and when you do, you jump the shark and tall buildings.
And we'll talk about the shark that you jump in a later issue, because what happens when friends become love interests to heroes?
Oh, exactly. Then you move well into the next issue.
Like Foggy Nelson. Poor Foggy.
Well, certainly no discussion of the friend of the superhero could be complete without... I think there was an organization for superhero friends. Its president would be none other than James... I was just going to make up a middle name, but I'm not going to do that because someone will check on his name. His middle name was Wilson.
Do it.
But
do it.
James Olsen, a.k.a. Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
God, he is the glutton for punishment. He is the all-over...
Unlike any other friend. I mean, granted, he's like Tonto. He goes into town, gets beat up.
Right.
And comes along and saves the day. But he's the only superhero friend who ever got his own book.
He's also... Well, I don't know. I can't say that. Because the poor thing about superhero friends is they all, at some point, end up with... Super-powered, depowered, roundabout-powered, sad-powered. It's just awful things happen to them. Just awful, awful things.
Yeah, like dying.
like becoming a giant turtle monster, which is what our pal James Tiberius Olsen, yeah. Yeah. Went through. What's
James that? T. Olsen.
So
wow.
let's start with James T. Olsen. Because
as he was known in his... titular comic Superman's pal.
Exactly.
Yeah. He wasn't just his friend, he was his pal. This guy had he was kicking it old school.
Right. So
because in the pages of Superman's pal, you could say that if he was having a good time, he was at a party being very jovial, you could actually back then say that he was gay.
Right.
And it just meant that he was happy.
So what poor Foggy Nelson. So what happens So what happens with this? What happens with Jimmy Olsen? What makes him do this for 70 years? What makes him follow Superman around through the death of print media and be his stalwart human companion?
Absolutely. I think part of it is there's a sense of pride in being in an inner circle. Even if you're almost like an interloper. Because he has Superman's confidence to the point that Superman is willing to trust him with the most annoying device, if you're Superman, that could ever exist.
Yep.
You don't want to hand these out to everybody, and that's the wristwatch signal.
True. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
There's a level of trust and respect there. How do you gain that? And I think it's just dumb luck. There are some points in life where you just sort of dumb into things, and people standing at a distance wow, check out Jimmy Olsen, he's Superman's pal, how do you get that gig? And the thing is, he just happened to be in the right place at the right time to see that Clark was Superman, and say, look, I don't want anything, I'm not going to mess with your stuff here, I kind of know you're Superman.
Right.
And it was no big deal. He's I tell you what, because you were good, I'm going to give give you a Signal wristwatch. I don't know where it came from. I don't know why I have it.
And I also don't know why I need it, because I can hear a pin drop in Nairobi from Detroit.
And all you have to do is whisper under your breath, "Hey, Superman, give me a hand here." And you know, I'd be there. I don't know why this was necessary.
Right.
Good point.
It's to make him feel important.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's there. It doesn't really serve. It's like giving a kid, like if you're a 7 or 8 year old kid and you go to the police station and they give you that plastic badge or the airline wings back when TWA was around. It just makes
and back when they would actually allow anyone within 100 yards of the cockpit.
Right. That's what that is. But
that's a good point. It's like getting a little novelty fireman's helmet or
right. Like here you go, buddy.
Book of matches when you go to the
But what makes him...
They had to cut out giving the kids a book of matches as a souvenir. But,
right. So what makes him follow Superman around? What makes him do this?
Hey, it's his job. He gets he's a photographer. He's a photographer for the Daily Planet.
Yeah,
big money shots.
Yeah,
that's true. He's sort of like an independent Peter Parker.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to, like, go back and retrieve his camera later.
I think he's a codependent Peter Parker. I think that's totally what he is.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know much about Jimmy Olsen's history. I don't think it's been adequately explored, at least to my knowledge. And, you know, Steve hears this, he's probably thinking, oh, somebody tell him. But there's a good chance he was an abused stepchild. Because he's got
redhead,
the first criteria down.
Because he's redheaded? Oh, come on. But no, I mean, seriously, there is a level there within these friends, and you can go through and list a bunch of them. There is a level of codependence that only speaks to a certain psychological disposition. Jimmy Olsen has it. His relationship with Superman, as far as the comic books go, defines the character.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Jimmy Olsen not only has that, he has a surplus. He could actually loan some out to Snapper Carr and Wyatt Wingfoot if their reserves were low.
There's somebody else that really falls into this category, and up until recently, at least, and even recently, that's Flash Thompson.
Oh, yes.
Being the Spider-Man, the Jimmy Olsen of the Spider-Man world, even later when he becomes Venom. Again, defined by the character, defined by Spider-Man. He was a star.
I think even as evil, the symbiote gets Flash Thompson, and then it probably is regretting its choice after a while, because it's like all this guy does is want Spider-Man. The symbiote wants to go see, you know, Miss Saigon. You think the symbiote is controlling.
Well, when the Beyonder creates you in the Beyonder Cosmic Cube world, you finally make it to Earth. All you want to do is go see the producers. But
exactly. No, this jerk wants to go beat up Spider-Man. You know, a lot of people think the symbiote is controlling its host. It's actually, a lot of it is talk about codependence.
Right, but so there's a codependent level there, where your character is defined by the super character that you attach yourself to. You know who else falls into this category in a huge way?
Well, and also, real quick, on that note, the whole designation of Superman's pal falls neatly into that. Because, I mean, he literally is defined by his relationship. It's like, oh, you're Jimmy Olsen, Superman's pal. No, I'm Jimmy Olsen. I'm a photographer. I won 5 Pulitzers.
Right.
And forever, I'm going to be Superman's pal. Why can't anyone look at Jimmy Olsen, the award-winning photographer? I've got a gallery show in Metropolis. But no, you know, that's it. Certainly. I'm sorry. I was channeling angry James Olsen.
You were Morton Downing it up over there. The one I was speaking to was Harley Quinn.
Oh.
There is no more codependent a friend of a superhero or supervillain than Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn, who Hugo Strange did up big time with the Joker. You know, she is the invisible woman of the crime world, unfortunately. She just keeps coming back for more. It's awful, and she just keeps coming.
Oh, absolutely.
So who else falls into that category?
And the thing about it is, you know, I was a little hesitant on jumping into the middle of Harley Quinn because our next issue is about the love interests. But in a way, I think it really is more, you know, for all the lip service Joker may bother to give her.
Yeah.
You know, she's gaga for him, but I think it is really more unrequited. So she's more just a, like, Joker's pal.
Right. She's Joker's punching bag, essentially.
Yeah, and basically because he gave her a signal watch. It doesn't have a signal. It's just an old watch he found in the trash. But, you know, it makes her feel special. So there you go.
Right, exactly. So who else falls? I don't really think Rick Jones falls into that category.
I was thinking about Rick Jones just now, and I was kind of coming to the same conclusion. He's not really codependent with... It'd be kind of hard to be codependent with the Hulk anyway.
Or any of the Avengers.
No, I disagree, because I think that Rick Jones was a slacker. I'm going to come out and say, Rick Jones is a slacker. He's hanging out. I'm just going to drive out in the desert and play my guitar.
Right.
I don't want to work. Because I'm a slacker. I'm a 60s hippie beatnik slacker. And I'm channeling my great-grandfather here.
It's, you know, hike up, put up, get a job.
I never met my great-grandfather, but it's neither here nor there. I have a feeling that's who's coming in here. And he didn't like Rick Jones for some reason. I didn't realize great-grandpa was a fan of the Hulk. But... This is a weird episode.
It really is. I told you, we dissected our own episodes, remember? And this is the one. This is the one that always goes off the rails because we feel like we're over the summit. And right. And we forget that we have two more to go.
It's all down here from Hill. The thing about it is, I think that once the Hulk comes along, you know, Banner chucks him into apparently a radiation-proof ditch. That if you're at the bottom of the ditch, you're safe from gamma rays. But if you're on top of anything, and if that ditch gets, like, you know, 18 inches higher, deeper, or, you know, shallower, rather,
right,
like you're on top of a kid that you've knocked into the ditch, that's all the difference in the world. Those 18 inches, 20 inches, whatever his body mass was,
right,
that just put Banner at the top of the high enough up in the ditch that he became the Hulk. But in a way, I think Rick Jones he's sympathetic because at least early on, you know, he tries to reason with the Hulk because he imagines he's Gene Hackman in Young Frankenstein.
I think he just imagines he's Gene Hackman.
He may well have. He's good in anything. But, but I think, you know, he feels somewhat responsible because if he hadn't been a jerk, security hadn't been lax on the part of the U.S. government, letting slackers come out in the desert to play their guitar,
yeah,
then perhaps there never would have been a Hulk.
That's true.
And there would be nothing for Tony Stark to brag about.
Here's the question, right? How much of this, and we discussed it in issue one, let's discuss it a little in issue three. We kind of came to the realization that so much of what makes a superhero is guilt. How much of what makes the best friend, the stalwart soldier, the stand-by-me guy, how much of that is guilt? Because so many of these friends know the secret identity. So many of these friends know what these heroes are going through and know that they need somebody just to stand with them.
And I think that is it... more guilt or a sense of, almost more a sense of duty, really, to be that person you can't beat the secret out of. Like your Pete Rosses.
Right.
And, you know, it's almost like a burden you're happy to take on. You know, like, let me shoulder some of the load. By being the one person you say, oh, you know, I saw Clark earlier today.
Yeah, the alibi.
Yeah. He and I had lunch at the subway. Yeah. On
the street. He wasn't really flying through the air.
Yeah.
Exactly. He had glasses on.
I don't know why we were having lunch at the subway at 3 in the morning.
He had glasses Maybe on and a blue suit. It wasn't him. Right.
It was definitely not him. Whatever we were doing at 3 in the morning, it was the two of us. We were...
So
playing.
Wow. Well,
Oh, poor Foggy. Poor Foggy Nelson.
Oh, okay.
Poor Foggy
Nelson.
It's
a 24-hour fitness.
Yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah. They're playing racquetball.
Racquetball.
So, they call it squash. So, what? Okay, so here's another question, right? What are the criteria? What is the psychological criteria that a superhero is looking for in a super friend? So, you know, what's...
Oh.
Like you have to be kind of dumb. You know,
yeah,
I
think you have to be just enough smart to be able to manage the kind of dangers that come with being the friend of a superhero, and just enough dumb to not realize that this is too damn dangerous.
Right, and you also have to be dumb enough to not figure out the secret identity.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're... And be shocked when it's revealed to you. You know? Oh! Like, oh, you're dumb.
What? Oh, Padme's so... Queen Amidala? What?
No! No! Keira Knightley? No.
Risa didn't see that coming.
Oh, God, Jar Jar. Why? This show has a permanent Jar Jar ban. You know that. So, Frank...
I'm sorry. I lost myself in this one. I thought I could get away with it.
I'm always watching. I am always watching. So, Frank, name... What are we forgetting here? Like, who are we not getting?
What, in the way of friends of...
Yeah,
the
like the codependent superhero friend.
Oh, man, I'm trying to... I'm really...
Okay, I've got one I'll challenge you with in the meantime. Because I like to do this sort of thing and overthink stuff. Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's made a career on kind of being Batman's friend.
Listen, Commissioner Gordon is the Gloria Gaynor of of superhero friends. Like, he's always singing the I Will Survive song, you know? Like walk out. I don't need you anymore. I should have changed the locks in here, Batman. Like, and then here comes Batman, you know, back again. Like, and eventually he goes back to the bat signal, turns it on.
Yeah, and, well, he's like Mango on Saturday Night
Live.
Yes. he repulses. Cannot live without.
Well, okay, speaking of Batman, and let's just forget about Robin as far as being a friend. Although really not codependent, Alfred.
See, Alfred, for me, Alfred and Jarvis fall into a whole nother category of friend. They fall into what would be the upper echelon of comic book hero friends, where the heroes are codependent on them. It's
I think this is a new category. It's known as employees with benefits.
But at some point, like how much sway does...
It's kind of like friends with benefits, only if you're an employee, it's not sexual.
Like
you're getting paid, but you're also their friend.
Like, how much sway does Alfred have over Batman? How much sway does Jarvis have over the Avengers?
I think that Alfred has more sway than Jarvis could ever hope for.
Yeah.
Because Jarvis can advise, he can cajole, he can say, oh, you know, by the way, did it ever occur to anybody that maybe Egghead's back in town and maybe tricking you guys? They're like, yeah. And then meanwhile, you know, the front door blows open. Here comes the Sinister Six. But Alfred, like, you know, he can cock his eyebrow, and Batman will just he'll wet his tights. You know, he's got that mom look. He's got the
he's
eyes.
It takes a while to develop that. But here's my thing about Jarvis, right? Jarvis was what was he the Crimson Cowl at one point? Do you remember that storyline in the Avengers?
Oh wow, is that did we miss that retcon? Or
well, like back in the way back,
that retcon
back in the Wayback Machine, Jarvis was the Crimson Cowl, like for one issue. So he brought the Masters of Evil into Avengers Mansion through the kitchen, essentially. Like, and they posed as whatever, and they ransacked Avengers Mansion and virtually almost killed the Avengers. And in the end, he's revealed to be the Crimson Cowl, and he was under mind control, of course, because...
Oh, of course, yeah.
But it's one of those things where, like, the Avengers at the end are basically, they broke back mountained him, you know, like, I can't quit you, Jarvis! Like... Like, who's gonna wash Hercules's thing that he wears, harness?
We're not even sure what it's called. It, you know, classical historians aren't even sure what that's
right,
called.
Right, they're like...
There's nothing in the records. It has not been handed down to the...
That's just probably ages. A whole nother episode.
Yeah.
We need to do an episode. Cole, we need to make note to do... We're already doing one on the generations, the decades.
Yes.
A story arc. We need to do an episode on poor fashion choices in the comic book world. We could fill an hour easy.
I know, and it pains me to say orange and green are not complimentary.
We're looking at you, Simon Wonder Man. We're looking right in your face with that.
Right.
Your little beady blue ionic eyed face. So yeah, they're a whole nother, you know, when you not only know Batman's secret identity, you know the PIN number to his ATM card, and, you know, you're on speed dial, you've been forced to become a licensed medical practitioner, you can fill out prescriptions, you can get bloodstains out of Kevlar.
Well, that, and you've got power of attorney at Wayne Manor, I mean, come on.
That's pretty huge, right, yeah. Right.
Because those times when Batman's jaw has been dislocated, subsequently Bruce Wayne suffers a, you know, yet Alfred himself has to go drive the Porsche into a telephone pole and move Bruce into the driver's seat.
Right. I think that Alfred experiences a lot of guilt. You know, I think he has a lot of guilt for the death of the Waynes.
I think also because at that point, the Waynes were rich enough, and it occurred to him only too late, they could have had a private screening of Zorro back at the manor.
That's true. I mean, they are really rich.
Yeah. And so why did I let them talk themselves? There were better theaters. The Bijou had Zorro.
Right. You could have actually hired...
Why did they go to the Odeon?
You could hire the actors
from
Zorro.
The thing was nearly condemned. A year later, it was going to be knocked down anyway. Why?
You could have hired the actors from Zorro to actually do Zorro in your backyard and actually kill each other at, like, the world's most dangerous game and gotten away with it if you wanted
because
to.
You're Thomas frickin' Wayne, man.
That is right. You are the Denzel Washington of dead fathers in superhero comic books. You can do whatever you want. That's going to be a sad issue. So, what are the saddest sack friends that you can think of? Like, the most...
Dwayne Dickles.
Ma Cat... What was her name?
Ma Hunkle.
Ma Hunkle.
Yes, if there was anyone sadder than Doyby Dickles.
Poor
it was
Ma Hunkle.
Hunkle. Who bored holes in her best cook pot.
To wear it as a mask.
I'm hoping that she bored the holes from the outside or the inside out.
Right.
Because otherwise it gets kind of dangerous unless you get in there and rasp that down.
Yeah, you get some files and you have filings in your eyes.
But, and the big wool sweater, which I think that was actually to her advantage because it turned out a lot of the Golden Age villains, most especially Shade and Tigress, or the Huntress rather, were highly allergic to wool. So, you know, just brushing up against them in battles. They're like, they're just like itching away, and dynamite can come over and slug them. So, you
right.
know, she served a purpose.
You know what dawns on me, and it keeps slipping my mind, like right now it just disappeared on me. Oh, the most abused of any sidekick, okay? Like comic book sidekick friend was Jean-Pierre, the Canadian national, out-of-the-closet gay, legless pilot for Mark Spector Moon Knight.
Oh,
that
wow.
Poor man. Just dealing with the crazy man abuse and having to fly a moon-shaped helicopter all over the place to pick up his dumbass.
Yeah, he was worse off than that guy... Than the guy's assistant in Darjeeling Limited. I mean,
Anderson.
Why are you so bald?
Why hasn't Wes Anderson done a... Wes Anderson needs to do a comic book movie. What movie does Wes Anderson need to do?
Moon Knight.
Oh, my God. No, no. I would like to see Wes Anderson direct Iron Fist. That's what I would like to see. But what about, you know, there have been so many. I don't know. Can we consider Bucky Barnes in this?
Because Early on, I think, you know, he's like transcends. He's sort of like that bridge between friend and hero.
Right.
Because you kind of hang, unlike Robin, who didn't have a choice, he's just sort of like, congratulations, I decided to adopt you. Sorry about your parents yesterday. What, yesterday?
Right.
I mean, I know you're richer than God, but, you know, give me a chance to grieve before you have oh, hey, nice pad. So, you know, that didn't really matter. And, oh, by the way, I'm Batman. So,
exactly.
You know, he was caught up in the whirlwind, but Bucky was, like, hanging out with his old pal Steve. He just got pumped up. All of a sudden, like, you know, he's getting shot at. Like, can I have, like, a mask or something? Maybe a shield or
something? Here's a Tommy gun.
That's right. Here's a good thing to give a 12-year-old in the 40s.
Here's a Tommy gun. Go stand next to me. I'll protect you until we're flying over the Arctic Ocean. You sad bastard.
I'm busy over here. Could you take care of that bomb for me? Oh, that wasn't a good idea.
I have one. Microchip of the Punisher fame.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Now, see, that's dedication there. That's where, you know, where you're just slavishly dedicated to somebody, even though you know they're wrong.
Right. It's like, you know, you're like, hey, I was thinking maybe, Frank, you and I could go grab a cup of coffee and you know, just talk. We never really just sit down, the night is dark. Like, no, come on, man. Like,
crime must be punished.
You know, was Microchip really a friend? Or maybe he was just using the Punisher to his own ends because the Punisher could get him equipment that he could not normally probably get.
So he's actually more like an ordnance fetishist.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily like to use it, like go out and kill people. But the Punisher would get him stuff. He's like, you know, why sit and look at Guns and Ammo magazine when you can hold this shit in your hand?
Yeah.
But at some point, don't you have to think maybe he wanted more as a friend?
I probably did. He's like, you know, can we just go to Chock Full of Nuts for half an hour? That's all I'm asking.
That's all I want. That's all I want.
All the cool gear is just a bonus.
Yeah, it's a plus.
It's, you know, I could see him being like, if Frank's going out the door, he's got, you know, two Uzis strapped over his side. He's putting the knife into his big white boot. And Micro's like, hey, Frank. You know, it's October, and all of the pumpkin spice lattes are at Starbucks. Maybe later tonight, you know, we could go after you're done murdering a crime family.
That's right.
Try not to get shot too much.
They're open till 2 a.m. if you're not bleeding out.
Right, I'll stitch you up, and then we'll go do
once
that.
Once you finish your eternal dance with Jigsaw, where both of you get cut up more.
Exactly.
And then that's the end of it. How many stalemates do you need? You're like a couple of old guys in the park.
You know what I was
playing
thinking?
Chess.
You know what I was thinking when I was fixing your concussion from from the fight you just had with Hammerhead.
How do you
come on?
That's a new one. Fixing a concussion.
You know what I was thinking? We never go ice skating anymore.
You're just gonna go on, aren't you?
I'm not stopping. I don't stop. I don't.
Well, I think the problem with the ice skating is last time a Claymore landmine fell out of Frank Castle's jacket.
Whoops!
And blew a hole in the middle of the lake there.
Right, cordite. Cordite is not your friend.
Yeah, that's some bad news.
You know what? Here's the other one, right? How messed up is it? How messed up is it that Doctor Strange kept a small old Asian man and a minotaur in his house at all times?
Wow.
Poor Renta.
There's a point where you have to get all Star Trek. Say, no, Hakim, they have different ways in the valley. When you're the master of mysticism, I think you're operating in a whole different culture where not only is it acceptable, it's downright, you know, it's expected of you to keep an old Chinese man and a Minotaur around the house at all times. It would be gauche to be seen without it. You want Mordo to come over and like, oh, I see you have no Chinese man anymore.
But seriously,
I guess some
thing,
of us
right?
don't respect the old ways.
Here's the thing, right?
Like, you want Dormammu to visit and find out you don't have a Minotaur?
Why didn't he let Rintar out of the house? Like, here's my problem with this whole scenario, this scenario that we have built here, is Rintar's in the place for, what, let's say 90 years, however long a green Minotaur lives. I don't even know. But he's, you know, doing the menial labor, learning the spells, doing stuff. Every once in a while, I'm sure he wants to go out with Microchip and get a pumpkin spice latte. And Doctor Strange is like, hell no, you can't leave the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Okay, I'm gonna have to stop here because I know a little bit. I mean, I kind of wish we had Kelly on the show now because she'd brat me up on this. If you know enough about Minotaur society...
They don't get out of the maze? They don't get out much?
He wasn't in the maze because he was... His stepdad walled him up in there. They prefer that. They're homebodies.
It's called nesting.
Huh?
It's called nesting.
Yeah. They like watching QVC. You have to order a lot of stuff.
The Minotaur had a big screen TV in his maze. Is that what you're saying?
He had a lot of flameless candles. He had a lot of cubic zirconia, food dehydrators, and flameless candles in that maze.
I'm saying that the Minotaur used Tootie. So.
But here's my problem with that, right? Rintar, just let me make my damn joke. Will you please?
Sorry!
The thing comes in and out of the Sanctum Sanctorum like, you know, like he has appointments. And Rintar's like, what the shit? He can walk in and out of here, but you're not going to let a 9-foot-tall Minotaur run down and get a loaf of bread? All I want is a Zima, and you won't let me go get it. You're an asshole. Now my joke is dead. It was way too long. It was going to be really funny.
Well, I'll help you out here, because by the time he was ever allowed out, Zima was no longer on the market.
Listen, it's a little-known fact. Minotaurs like big-screen TVs, QVC, flameless candles, food dehydrator, and a Zima every once in a while. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just
there are other malt beverages available. Just don't bring them a Schlitz.
So what about Foggy Nelson?
Foggy's an interesting case because he's sort of like one of those, you know, it's like that Duff guy on the Ace of Cakes.
Oh, my God. Where are you going?
You start a business. Stick with me here. You start a business, and who do you hire but all your pals?
Right, yeah.
So, you know, Matt Murdock goes into law. He gets his old buddy Foggy to come in.
Does Foggy not have the fog? Was he called Foggy because he didn't have the foggiest?
I think probably so. I mean, Matt Murdock was legally blind. Foggy was just stupid blind.
Right.
There's no clinical designation. It's just stupid.
Like, I'm pretty sure at some point he saw Matt pull on the mask.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you have the same mask as the Daredevil.
It's like Shrek, at the end of Batman Returns. Like, why are you dressed as Batman?
Right, exactly.
I think, though, that Foggy's like the bug bladder beast of Troll. He imagines if you can't see him, he can't see you.
That's true. It's the old adage is true from the Batman movie. You either retire a friend or you live long enough to be an idiot. That's
wow.
Let me give you another friend who. I mean, sometimes there are tremendous benefits to being the friend of a superhero because it's not all just getting beat up or being stupid. A lot of it, like, take Wyatt Wingfoot.
Okay.
You know, he gets to go pal around with the Fantastic Four for years. And, you know, that in itself is neat. That's like, you know, being the guy that was the photographer for the Beatles.
That's true.
You know, he could, like, retire on this. And then what's the fringe benefit? He gets to sleep with She-Hulk.
That's a pretty big fringe benefit.
I mean, apart from Tony Stark, Hercules, Kane Marco, a.k.a. the Juggernaut, and about 46 circus midgets, nobody gets to sleep with She-Hulk.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
And you can check in the comics, she has slept with Juggernaut, Hercules, and Tony Stark.
Okay, so I got one. I got one that we haven't mentioned. And I think that we're really kind of hitting on the codependence thing. I think that there's a lot, when we're talking about the friend of the superhero, I think that there's a lot of codependence there.
Absolutely. I think that's the core on this one, where each, you know, you have the various facets with the hero. We had a split decision on exactly what defines the villain.
Yeah, yeah. But
I
it
think
was a good
codependence, either one direction or the other. Sometimes it's the hero.
Right.
It's more codependent on the friend than the friend on the hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, and I've got two, okay? They're interesting. So I wanna see what you both have. I wanna hear what Frank has to say about one, and I wanna hear what you both have to say on the other. How do you feel about Thor's friends, Frank? And I'm not talking like Thor's Earth friends. I'm talking about Thor's Asgardian friends. I'm talking Heimdall, Hogan, Ray Stevenson.
Warriors 3.
The Warriors 3. Well, you know, they're his friends, but they're also his comrades at arms, which brings him to a wholly, completely different level. I mean, they've fought in battles.
Oh, yeah.
Not codependent. I don't think they would be codependent at all. I don't think an Asgardian god, quote-unquote god, could be considered codependent with Thor. I mean, you're talking about a completely different level of friendship when, I mean, they have fought the good fight in Asgard and elsewhere, so.
They're sort of the Horatio to Thor's Hamlet.
That's true. That's true. And you know what else they are? Is constantly irritated as hell. And here's why.
Yes.
Because they're going to get into a fight. Heimdall's got his rapier out. You know, Hogan's got his mace and his horn helmet. And Ray Stevenson's got his axe and his turkey leg. Volstagg. And they are going toe to nuts, tits to tea kettles with some frost giants, right? They are going at it. And it's a battle that lasts, you know, a day. They are fighting frost giants across Jormungandr.
This has gotten to the point where the ham hawk is down to just the bone, because he's alternating swatting a frost giant and taking a bite.
I mean, it's the kind of fight where they have a break. You know, both sides agree that they need to stop.
There's a whistle, and it's halftime.
And then what happens? Inevitably, Thor shows up. Because he can't leave well enough alone, and he stopped a Skrull invasion back on Earth, back on Midgard, and he's like, my friends need me. They don't need you. They're Asgardian gods, damn it. So you show up with your hammer and your ego and your luscious blonde hair, and you start beating the crap instantly out of all of
the frost giants. Not to mention his symbiotic helmet.
Right, right. So
whatever that thing he wears, you know. I don't know what it's called. It's a loincloth.
That's Hercules.
Oh, that's right.
No, here's the thing about Thor. He wears a loincloth over his armor, which makes no sense.
Sure, he does.
All right, just stop it. Just stop it. You're just showing off. That's all you're doing. So he shows up and upstages all of his friends at every turn. Like, you know, very rarely does he get to play Damsel in Distress in the Warriors 3 and Sif show up to save his ass. No, he's going to show up, play the Jub-Jub song on some damn frost giants, and then everybody goes back and has a flagon of mead, and everybody's going to be like, oh, great, Thor saved us 5 minutes from when we won, you asshole.
They were down to 7 frost giants at that point. The field was littered with
dead-ass broken frost giants.
Yeah. They were all crawling back. Then Thor comes in, smacks his hammer on the ground. Everybody falls over.
You know who's the real asshole in this situation? Heimdall. for not putting his arm out and going, hey, hey, just let him have this one.
Look, just between friends, let him, Kevin, give him
just that. Give him, I see everything, man. I see everything. Just let him have this one.
Look, the scrolls are back.
Right, right. Loki escaped from prison again.
Find the scrolls again.
Hurry before they get to Asgard.
Like I don't know why Heimdall didn't play the cop in Benny Hill with Thor more. Oh, there goes Loki in a bear costume. Better get on your tricycle. So by one more I've got, and again, I want to start with Frank on this, because it's for me, it's a very codependent, you've got to earn your paycheck sort of, not necessarily friendship, but a supporting cast, begrudging friendship type thing. And that is before the Red Hulk inception, General Thunderbolt Ross. Like, I really want to know how we feel about General Thunderbolt Ross. Like, there would be no General Thunderbolt Ross if there was no Hulk.
You know what? He would still be around, but...
Yeah, but what would he be doing, really?
He'd be a paper pusher at the Pentagon.
He owes Hulk a lot.
Oh, you know what? He probably would be retired.
Yeah.
That's true. Maybe he doesn't owe the Hulk
probably
a lot.
By that time, he would have been retired. He would have retired.
He would have been miserable at home.
The Hulk gave his career meaning.
Gave him purpose.
Exactly. And you know, otherwise, he'd be like living on a little estate in the Hamptons, and you know, Betty and Bruce and the kids would come.
Yeah.
And he'd be obliged to get up from the football, and. And play with his grandkids, and it would just be, I mean, you think the Warriors 3 were annoyed.
Right, you think it's a good life, but we're talking about somebody who's an absolute, you know, warrior.
I think if the Beyonder or somebody like that wants to go and mess with somebody, make him go and mess with General Ross and show him what his life, you know.
Would have been like.
Great. What if there was no Hulk?
You have the end of the episode, General Ross going through his nightly routine, and him staring at a pistol.
Right! He goes in, brushes his teeth.
With a single bullet.
Dark there. That's
right. He goes in.
It would have been, you know, the bomb would have gone off, and Banner would have gone, oh, taking his readings, and, well, this isn't really a good weapon to use in war, and they would have shelved the entire project, and Banner would have gone on to something else, and... Ross would have been, like I said, eventually retired.
Yeah, he's there over at the homestead watching the Banner get a third Pulitzer Prize.
Right, he gets another Nobel Prize.
Nobel
Prize.
And then he immediately gets up, walks over, puts in Deer Hunter, watches it, goes in, brushes his teeth.
That's right. Pours his nightly bottle of scotch. Glass of scotch.
Calls Frank Castle, leaves him a voicemail.
Come on, can we get like a pumpkin latte?
Frank Castle finally picks up and says, just go with Micro. I always have to go with Micro. You never make time for me.
You know, one of the things that we didn't talk about was that danger element of being friends or being associated with the superhero. Certainly one of the things that really hit was back when Perez was doing Wonder Woman. He was, I think, one of the first. I stand corrected, because Wonder Woman had a friend in Etta Candy.
Okay.
But she was more like, kind of like, oh, look, the funny fat woman.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was just sort of a comic foil or comic friend, a comic relief character. Perez took that character and elevated her to a much more sophisticated level. And she was very good friends with Diana Prince and with Steve Trevor. And then you also had, at some point, and I have no earthly idea what her name was, but I think there was a woman who was like a scientist or something, and her daughter.
Yes.
Single mom character, which is an incredibly cool, modern, smart dynamic.
Right, yeah.
And they were... great friends, and some years later I discovered that apparently something happened to the daughter where she winds up becoming the Silver Swan, I believe it was.
Okay, yeah.
Somehow she got, like, brainwashed and altered and you know, mutilated with, you know, nasty super surgery to become this sonic villainess. And then there was, like, some struggle later on to try to rehabilitate her and get her back, as it were. And, you know, it was one of the really best uses of not just simply villains necessarily targeting your friends, but throwing them back in your face as a villain.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's one of the big aspects of this is you know, you've got to, at some level, thrive on danger in order to be one of these superhero friends. You've got to be willing to take that risk.
And you know that I'm going to go here is Watchmen.
Yeah, my God.
Because you have that character whose name eludes me right now, who was Dr. Manhattan's friend. He was Osterman's friend before he became Dr. Manhattan.
Right.
And becomes effectively a tool in Ozymandias' toolkit and is given cancer so that ultimately it can, you know, aspersion can be thrown onto Dr. Manhattan himself because of their close contact for so many years.
Right.
And being artificially given cancer to further someone's master plan is one of the worst consequences of being friends with a superhero.
That's very, you know, true.
That's the downside. The upside is getting laid by She-Hulk.
Leave it to Alan Moore to give us the worst thing that you could possibly have happen to you when you're a friend of a superhero.
Those are the two sides of the coin, is basically Fantastic Four and Watchmen.
I've got one, and I again, we're getting ready to close. Before I go on, Frank, thank you.
You're welcome.
I didn't know that Minotaurs like big screen TVs in their mazes. So
I didn't either.
I feel enlightened tonight.
I try to bring some little bit of culture every episode.
Here's my last hero friend. When you live in the Savage Land, it's really hard to make friends. Unless you know a giant saber-toothed tiger named Zabu.
And don't those make the best friends of all?
They really do. And I think the most loyal of best friends was Kazar's tiger buddy.
Zabu was... You can't go wrong. They're fiercely loyal, provided they don't try to eat you.
Right.
But they're sort of like Siamese cats in the way that they'll sort of zero in on one individual, and that's their person, and then they'll try to eat everyone else. Except that, you know, if a Siamese cat were half a ton and had razor sharp giant fangs
and a higher than average intelligence.
That's right.
So I think that, you know, when you come down to it, of all of the super friends that are out there, none are more loyal than a giant saber-toothed tiger. If you'll hang out with
even Aquaman's octopus wasn't nearly so loyal.
We'll talk about that more in our bestiary episode. I almost said bestiality. That would have been a bad scene.
Predator!
Yeah, we could do a whole episode simply called Legions of Super Pets.
Right.
Not the Legion of Super Pets, but Legions of, like, many, many super pets.
I think that's a plan. All right. Here we go. We are going to close the show. I think we did the topic justice. Frank, do you have any last thoughts on friends of superheroes?
Not really, no.
Okay, fair enough. Did you just ABBA me?
This will to even.
I was actually totally unprepared for this. So
were we. Don't feel bad.
Up in our world.
Yeah. No. You gave us a lot to think about. You know, the Thunderbolt Ross retirement. You enlightened us. I thank you for being on the show. It was an honor. It was an honor.
And next time we promise to give you some forewarning about the topic, more than like 3 minutes. This was like stunt podcasting.
It really was. It was.
This is like the fear factor of podcasting.
This was a flash mob of podcasting tonight. So, Cole, what about you? What are your final thoughts?
I think at the end of the day, the potential benefits, if you find yourself confronted with the opportunity to befriend a superhero, the potential benefits far outweigh the potential risks. Because in my stilted way of thinking, the chances of getting laid by She-Hulk are greater than the chances of being poisoned by Ozymandias.
It trumps everything.
I think I've inspired Frank.
Okay, Frank, what do you got?
Now, my final thought is, better to have a superhero as a friend than as a neighbor.
That's very true.
Well said.
Well said. And on that, let's do some plugs. Of course, if you're listening to this, you probably found us at JediCole.com. The Jedi Cole has a new show that will be coming out soon, as well as...
We are launching a show very soon, probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks. And we're going to have a big announcement about it, but we'll sort of lay a few hints. It's a show that's been a couple of them. We're reformatting, restarting, and we're unleashing it, unleashing this beast again on the JCU very soon as part of the ever-growing JCU Podcasting Network.
Oh, yeah.
Home of this show, What'd You Think?, and the upcoming mystery show.
That's right. So that's coming, just to whet your appetite. You can always jump over to United States of Geekdom and check out the stuff that Cole and I and Frank have done over there.
Yeah.
Frank, do you have any plugs?
Jedi Cole, and of course Rick Gutierrez.
Right, and a revolving cast of many others. Frank, do you have any plugs?
No, not really.
Okay.
Well, actually, I think you do have a plug, because I think if you're in France and you're looking for a t-shirt.
Okay, yeah, for my Zazzle store. And, I sell t-shirts and mugs from my cartooning. It's go to Zazzle. It's my Zazzle store is Zanazaz Designs. That's Zanazaz Designs. T-shirts, mugs, stationery, and apparently I'm a big hit in France. I sold 2 t-shirts in France.
Hell yes.
Huh?
I said hell yes.
So that's my I would plug my gaming blog, but I haven't been really active on it lately.
Well, welcome to the world of podcasting. You might not have a choice anymore. It seeps into you like cadmium. And then you don't have a choice.
And jaundice.
And jaundice.
And sugar.
And sugar. You know what? I really like to make coffee, but instead of, you know, I like to take the bite out of it, so I sprinkle a little cadmium on it before I brew it. Really takes the bite out. All right.
Not to mention the centipede.
What's next week?
Next week. What's love got to do with it?
What's love got to do with it? Mm. Okay, I'm good now.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the sweet, sweet love interests of superheroes.
Yeah, we are. The sweet, sweet psychosis of love interests.
That's right. Next week on Hey Kids Comics, we're going to talk about the ones you love.
Next week on Hey Kids Comics, you'll be treated to a very special episode that we refer to as The Quiet Fire.
That's right. We have a letter, a little email here from Clark in Metropolis. Clark says, I want to send out a special dedication to my lovely wife, Lois.
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. All right. On that, I'm signing off. I'm going to end it the way I usually do. I want to send a special thank you to Frank. Go to his Zazzle store. Buy his stuff. It is amazing. I still have some Frank artwork around here somewhere that I cherish. Did you like that? Somewhere that I cherish. And by somewhere, I mean it's hanging.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. I tried to slide that in.
I actually have my Frank artwork handy right here.
No, mine's hanging on the wall in one of my mini-framed things. I just have to...
Wow, you framed my artwork?
Hell yes, I did, Frank. You're amazing. So go to Frank's Zazzle store. Buy his stuff. Stay tuned for more shows on the JCU. And as always, get yourself a superhero... Or at least get codependent with a library or a comic book shop and buy, collect, and enjoy your comic books. Say goodnight, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, guys. See you next week.